This is the 50th Anniversary History Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 3rd to the 5th, 2003. The recordings from this conference belong to the public domain. And this is an interview at the History Conference, and the person being interviewed is Grover N. from Oklahoma.
Right.
Through Alabama.
Right.
And Grover, will you start with when you got clean and where you got clean?
Okay. I came into the fellowship in January of 1986. Coming out of a treatment facility 30-day, I was picked up by a member that had been bringing an H&I meeting in. So my very introduction into Narcotics Anonymous was through the H&I program. Members in the local area and some towns within driving distance came, brought us a meeting once a week. This gentleman, Neil H., took me to several different meetings in several different towns a week and to several different H&I meetings and got me immediately involved in a penitentiary meeting. From that point, I had some confusion because of what the treatment center orientation was, is that you needed to do AA or else you weren't going to make it. And the suggestion of their aftercare was going to certain number of AA meetings as well as NA meetings. I found myself on a fence, and a member of Narcotics Anonymous that had some time and some experience gently set me down one day and said, you need to make a decision because what you're doing is you're standing on a fence. And one of these days, you're either going to jump off one side or the other, or you're going to fall and you're going to land straddle, which is going to hurt. I got a good visual image out of that. And shortly after that, I made a decision and made Narcotics Anonymous my home. In that time period, with me coming out of a treatment center, there was a flood of people being sent into our rooms in Narcotics Anonymous from treatment centers, from aftercare meetings. There was a lot of meetings, looking back in retrospect, that were, I guess you could say they were almost an AA NA meeting because of the language, the terminology, and the message that was being given. Being taught by some well-grounded members of NA about how to give back and what service was, and being directed towards steps and traditions, I started to slowly grasp that we had a message and we had a language. And the language and the message was about recovery from the disease of addiction. Through working the steps, I learned about the disease of addiction in my life and what kind of role that played. And being taught what I was taught from the very onset, that the only way that you keep what you have is by giving it away, and that you needed to be active, and the gratitude that I felt by people taking time, I just couldn't fathom people taking time out of their day, their life, to come all the way over to this treatment facility and sit down and share with us. You know, I'd lived isolated for so long in my addiction, alone, and so long that, you know, somebody else giving a shit about another human being was a foreign concept to me. So that, once I started to wake up, that moved me to the point that I made Tuesday night meeting a penitentiary meeting for the next 5 years. For the next 5 years, every Tuesday night was my penitentiary meeting that I went to. Whether I sat there on and just sat there and listened, or whether I shared. But it's a meeting that I attended. Not that it was my meeting, but it's just a meeting that I attended that I had to be at for me. Neil was very instrumental in picking me up and taking me to functions. My first function outside of my area was called Surrender in the Mountains. It was held at Cheehaw State Park in central Alabama. I met Larry North. I heard Larry North speak. I met Casey from Georgia. I met Ed. I started to form relationships and connections with people that had long amounts of clean time, that had a very gentle spirit about them, but also a very firm grasp on our traditions and how we conducted ourselves in our meetings and how service should be conducted. Got involved very quickly in my recovery in the H&I committee in our area. We had a struggling area. As everybody knows that's ever been in service, if you show up, you're going to be given something to do. There's just not an overwhelming number of people that are willing to do everything that needs to be done. So there was a functioning area committee. My best recollection was that there was maybe six or seven people at the first area meeting that I went to. It was an old farmer's market. It was a cinder block building with I don't know that it even had windows in it. Was my first area service meeting. PI had a number. There was a lady that was very active in PI, and actually she was PI. And it's basically the same way that H&I was. There was one person that was H&I. And I got to be a part of that area. And through a process of working the steps with the sponsor, I learned that I didn't know. And I learned that if you don't know, you need to ask for help. And you look for help through people that have been there and done that, through experience. So immediately my focus turned to looking for people and actually God having a way of putting those people into my life that had been there, very active. I was fortunate enough in North Alabama to be close to Georgia. Motorcycle Ed became my sponsor. I became very close to Bo S., to Greg P. So I got to hear all of the stories around the basic text. And one thing that went with those stories was the spirit that accompanied them sharing about what happened, how that all came about, how it was inclusive, that any member that showed up was given something to do, how members held the phone while somebody else typed to the point that somebody's ear was bleeding from having the phone at their ear for so long. And that type of service just overwhelmed me to no end. At that first Surrender in the Mountains at Cheehaw State Park, after Larry North spoke, and he's gone now, he died of another disease, and he's missed, and he needs to be remembered. But I heard the third paragraph of We Do Recover read. And a handful of us from our area took that back. And we got that approved to read in our meetings, in our groups, in that town, in Huntsville. And then it became adopted by the area and it spread through our region. And it had a special place and still does for me, because those words ring true. And it's the essence of our disease, to me. It sums it up in a real short paragraph. I started to form relationships with people that had been here for long periods of time. We had problems in our meetings, with the meetings being flooded by treatment centers, aftercare facilities, and I don't think they did that to intentionally harm Narcotics Anonymous, but they did that in order to help themselves. You know, it was a good selling point. You know, we've had so many people go through here, and we got so many people that are still sober slash clean today. And they used the fellowships at large in order to facilitate that. Well, what we ended up with is we ended up with a bunch of cross-addicted, poly-addicted, you name it, to the point that one night I said, I'm Grover, I'm an alcoholic addict welder, and we just kind of got down to the meat of what, you know, what the problem was, and it was a fight. It was a struggle for our message and for our language. We brought people up because we knew that we didn't know, and we wanted help, so we asked for help. And the people from Birmingham and Georgia came readily, drove. They paid for their gas. They paid for the wear and tear on their automobiles. They took their time to drive to Huntsville in our area to help us. And Thule and Susie and Mike and Ed and Greg and other people came when they were asked. There was never, no, I'm busy, or maybe next time, or we'd like to, but it was, sure, when do you need us? And slowly, through education, workshops, learning days, basically just an educational process. This is our message, and this is how it works. It quit being a fight and a struggle, because people heard, and they woke up. And they said, yeah, this is about the disease of addiction and recovery from. And through that process, a lot of us formed very close personal relationships with these people. Bill Brooks, very instrumental. Bill was a very controversial person during those times, too, because Bill attended AA meetings, and he went to the roundups. And, so he had some opinions. And I truly believe that if it wasn't for Bill today, I wouldn't be here. Because when I was in that treatment center, Bill Brooks is the one that pissed my ass off so bad that I said, by God, I'm going to stay clean just to show you. And Bill and I formed a very special relationship. I used to call Bill up the last few years, and I'd just be driving around, and I have this overwhelming sense of gratitude for Bill keeping the door open when no other members showed up for weeks, for months, long periods of time, just keeping the door open in hopes that somebody would show up. And I felt like he kept that door open for me. So I called him up and I said, Bill, you know, I really appreciate you, brother. I'm glad you're there. Somewhere in that point of time, Bill and Greg hooked up and started they may have had a long-lasting relationship prior to that, but I started to notice a relationship between Greg P. and Bill on a, I believe it's a sponsorship basis. Ed was my sponsor, and of course I was going to a lot of different functions. I was involved in our area. We addressed our needs. We didn't have a functioning H&I committee. That was our first focus, is we got H&I and P&I committees, and we got members, and we started increasing. Well, our next focus was literature. We needed literature. Well, how are we going to do that? We've got a poor area. We don't have a lot of money. We had H&I, P&I learning days coupled with a fundraiser. We'd have a speaker meeting. Saw Doreen downstairs and hugged her neck and thanked her because she was very instrumental. In 86, 87, 88, there's no telling how many times Doreen came to North Alabama to help us to raise funds. We always coupled our fund with a learning day or workshops. And we never just depended on the people from our group or our area. We always looked outside. It's kind of like, you know, prophets without honor in their own country. And a lot of times you might could say something in your group, but he could walk into that same group and say the same thing, and they'd listen to him, but they wouldn't listen to you. If you know what I mean, I don't know why that works that way, but that's just how it works. So that's what we did. You know, we invited those people to come in. Doreen showed up. She shared, and I shared with her down there, that first fundraiser that she helped us with for H&I, we raised enough money that our area took care of its needs, its phone line. We were able to buy 200 basic texts to give out to the hospital. Well, we didn't give them to the hospital. We gave them to the jails, the county jail meetings, to the penitentiaries. We got those books out. That's where they went, jails and institutions. We felt like the paid facilities, you know, we didn't see any need to give those away there. So we did. So we gave them to places where they could buy 200 books from one workshop, one day. And Doreen facilitated that. Because people came from all over here, and there's no telling how many people were there. It just filled the whole place up. It was a wonderful time. And it began a process of growth for our area. There's no telling how many times Ed came to speak. Mr. Bill came in to speak. Greg P. Tooley. I guess for lack of a better word, all the giants in our corner of the universe came in and poured their heart out and helped us with our message. You know what? Our message got real clear. And our meetings went from one meeting in Huntsville, Alabama, to where we had four groups, to where we had a marginally functioning area, to where we had area meetings if there were 10, 15, 20 people. And yeah, sometimes it's almost a fist fight because you had so many damn personalities. But, you know, they were there to fight, so what the hell? You know, everybody had their thing that they wanted to get done. But on the whole, we functioned as a team and as a unit. There wasn't always a fight or a controversy. We got business done. And we had our priorities, H&I, P&I. And then the rest. So that's kind of where I came from, being brought up around people, and I'm going to term this as spiritual service, people that gave without asking anything in return, people that allowed God, as they understood him, her, it, whatever, to work through trusted that it would be okay and just showed up. We hear it talked about an awful lot, we lead by example. Well, those people led by example. Okay. And what it did for me and others, Ryan Raffield and myself, we grew up in service together. Those bonds that were knitted in that H9, P9, and area committees, they're still there today. You know, it's 17 years later. You know, but we got close. We became family. And what it did for me is it created a love affair. I'd heard Ed talk about a love affair many times. I never quite got it. One day I woke up and I understood what he's talking about. It was the overwhelming sense of gratitude for what I've been getting. One of my last remembrances using them was pulling a rig out of my arm, hiding in my bedroom, having my two-year-old daughter walk in, see me, run out of the room screaming. I overdid it, way overdid it. Ran into the bathroom, crumbled up the works, tried to flush them. Whole time I saw the cops busting through the front door, handcuffing my wife, child services taking my daughter, trying to break down my door to get in. I've got a pistol in the bathroom. No, my pistol's outside in the bedroom. That's where it's at. I'm wishing I had the pistol in the bathroom because I didn't want to go to jail. Been there, done that, didn't want to go back. I looked in the mirror, and what I saw scared me to death. It horrified me. When I finally opened the door, there was my wife, and there was my daughter. And I went to the chair, and I sat down, and I said, God, please help me. 2 weeks later, I was in a treatment center. Week after that, if they could give me that detox medicine, that was my clean day. And for the grace of God, I had these sins. So what hit me and what I woke up to was remembering that day, remembering that night. Going to my first 3 penitentiary meetings and seeing 3 people that I used to run with that were locked up that couldn't leave with me. Being in a meeting one night and coming in the next night, and the boy I hugged on the front porch went home and committed suicide. Being in a meeting one night, coming back, seeing everybody crying because another fella had hung himself. Turning on the TV and seeing one of our members being hauled into jail because he had shot through the door of the dealer's house and shot him, and the cops had chased him all over town. He was shooting through back at him, and they finally wrecked his car and hauled his ass to jail. I go to age 9 meeting a few months later, and there he is in the penitentiary. And I go, there but the grace of God, go me. So what I meant by the love affair was when I woke up with gratitude for what I'd been given. And that knowing how precious, it's like the love of your life, the most beautiful girl that you've ever met, the most loving and caring, considerate, passionate, everything you ever wanted, rolled up into one. That's what Narcotics Anonymous came to be. Well, knowing the personalities that I've visited with you on, you also know that there was controversy in the 80s over the basic text.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about your experiences with the history? You being the regional history chair, and about a little bit about the history conferences in Alabama in the early 90s, and then go into some of that controversy.
Knowing how the basic text came to be, knowing the controversy that had been fostered, and if you'll remember the time period from 1986 to 1989, there was an awful lot of controversy about concepts, our traditions, how service should be done, whether it should be spiritual service or what I call corporate service. Whether service boards and committees are responsible to those they serve and follow the traditions, or whether they are forcing to themselves. Now, that same relationship I described to you a minute ago, imagine somebody coming along and trying to take that away from you. That's the threat. That's the feeling that I felt. That's what other people felt. That was the motion that we had. I made a trip to Georgia with the thought I drove 4 hours, met with Ed in his TV room. I said, Ed, if the steps work for us as members, why can't we as a fellowship heal by doing a four-step? I said, isn't a four-step nothing but our history? This is tearing us apart. It is literally tearing us apart. Could we not get people together, sit down, put all the information out there, and do our four step? You look at the good, you look at the bad, you look at the ugly, you look at the beautiful, and you just put it down. Couldn't we do that in the form of a committee? Do a four step, write a history book? He thought about it. We shared about it. We prayed. We made a decision. I went home. Asked Bill B. I ran it by Bill B. I said, Bill, let's take it to the area. Would you be the chair? I don't want my personality in it. I'm too attached. I'll help you. But I want it to be my bill. Bill agreed. Took it to the area, and the area said, let's do it. That was 1989, maybe 88. Not exactly sure of the date. We formed a ad hoc committee to research whether it's feasible to do it. We have minutes to where we went to the region, and an ad hoc committee was formed. We gave intent to what we were going to do. It wasn't going to be what we said. We're going to bring people in from all areas to share their experience, strength, and hope. We're going to put it on tape. And then from that, we'll do it like we did the basic text. We'll workshop it. And the fellowship as a whole, we'll write the book. And we'll get past this. Okay? We'll heal. Our committee was formed. We were fully self-supporting through our own contributions. We had fundraisers. We had a fully established committee. We kept accurate minutes. We set a date, August 19th, 1990, for our celebration. Flyers were done, fundraisers were held, word went out, agenda was set. At our first celebration, and it was a celebration of NA history. At our first celebration, we had on the panel Greg Pete, Board of Trustees, very active in the World Service Office, right there arm in arm with Jimmy for years. Knew it intimately. Bo S., World Lit Chair. Probably the spearhead and the reason we have a basic text to begin with, because while other people were talking about it, Bo did it. God used Bo as an instrument. Might as well say he's kind of like a David. Somebody had to stand up and slay the dragon while people were talking about it. Okay? Bo was not intimidated, and if you know Bo, you understand where he's at. It's not a matter of fear. It's a matter of faith. An action. Okay? So Bo was on that. Joseph P. Jim Miller. Those are the people that surrounded the efforts and the basic text that we could pull together. We brought in copiers. We set up an archive room where we brought in just tons of archives. People were able to bring them in, all the different literature from the whole time table. Coffee cups, t-shirts, flyers. And we set up a display room, an archive room. In that, we also set up computers and a copy machine. And we were busy history is not I think. It is what can be documented. It is not somebody's opinion. It is what you can physically document and back up with recorded events. So that's what we did. We copied archives. We got people to share. And we were putting the two together. We worked day and night. There was addicts from all over the country. Over 250 people showed up. I remember two girls from Michigan walking the halls crying Sunday because they didn't want to leave. And that was a feeling we all had. I went home after something. This is how God works in the deal. I went home after a piece of equipment. I just happened to be on the PI hotline. The phone rings as soon as the door unlocks. I walk in the door, hotline, got a call for you, patched the call through. That went through the process of call. Where are you at? Okay, we're coming to get you. Left there, went and got this addict. Took him to the conference and sat him all weekend. He pitched in and helped us all weekend while he was jonesing. See this guy a couple years later. He's still clean. The money that was raised from that, we donated money to the area and to the region, and we set aside a Freedom Reserve for Montgomery. Bill was elected regional chair, had served his term as regional history chair. I was his vice chair. During that next year, I took the seat as chair. We had a fully functioning regional committee, and Donnie J., I think he was living around Montgomery at that time, was elected to host and put together the Montgomery Conference. The agenda was set. We invited Bill Beck, Cindy D., Father Dan Egan, Betty Kay. We paid for their tickets. We paid for their rooms.
Bob Barrett was there also. Bob B. was there also, wasn't he?
It's probably in the minutes. Mm-hmm. At this point, I couldn't tell you. Maybe it was Bob Barrett instead of Bill Beck. Mm-hmm. Both of them? Yeah, very well could have been. I know that what happened after that, I shut all that out for a long time. And I've just this year been able to revisit.
Tell me about some of the effects on you personally. And when you were in Alabama, resulting from the history, looking into the history there.
There was a little bit during Montgomery, there's a little bit of dissension. Some of the personalities in our region that did not want this effort to happen. Raised the stink from the podium. We gave an open mic for a time. Dave was there, Grateful Dave. And you know Dave, he gave his 2 cents. Okay? He had some baby blues with him, to which he gave people.
Why did people not want this history conference to happen in Montgomery?
I think because Dave was there, they thought that we were in league or a conspiracy to uproot WSC, WSO, takeover, circumvent, whatever their fear was. I'm not sure exactly. You'd have to talk to them to know exactly what their fear was, if they'd be honest about it. But they just did not want this to take place. And I look at this as, I don't think it's the people, I think it's the disease. Because you know, as we are as addicts, when we enter into a 4-step, it's very difficult for us to face that. And we don't go there because we want to. We go there kicking and screaming. And I believe that's what we encountered through these personalities was the disease of addiction. It's better to be in comfortable pain than go to unfamiliar ground.
Was there a division there in Montgomery? Did it spread to your hometown of Huntsville?
There was a division through our region. there was a major effort made to discredit us as a committee and some of us as individuals by individuals coming in from out of state, going to different areas in different groups, telling things that were not true. Nobody came to me as a chair and asked me any questions pertaining to any issues that they may or may not have had with the committee or with the effort. Nobody came to Bill and asked him as a person or as a member or as a recovering addict any questions relating to issues, concerns as us as a committee or as a person. They didn't ever do that. What happened was people from outside of our state, inside our state, went to areas within our state and started their own personal campaign of destruction. Okay. We made a decision that we were not going to fight that. We made a decision that if that's what they wanted to believe, then we're going to trust God. And if it comes down to it, the area, and they vote to shut it down, then, you know, they vote to shut it down. But we're not going to play that game. So we continued doing what we were going to do. Billy Allen from Pennsylvania, I guess my first bitter taste was when he tried to, what I consider, jump ahead. Since this was planned and he was aware of it, he set Allentown up to be the first. I went with another member to Allentown. It was a small gathering. There was some decent information, but there was, as I remember, there was also a lot of conflict. It's the best thing that I got from it. Madison, the spirit there, anybody that was there will tell you that it was thick. And a lot of good things happened there. Montgomery, it was special. It was our 38th anniversary as a fellowship. I know Father Dan wasn't a member, but as a human being, he poured his soul out and helped us as addicts for years. And to meet him and his spirit, something I'll never forget. To listen to Betty share and Cindy and Bill and the different people share, it was a wonderful experience. Donnie and his committee did a great job. Our participation wasn't as it was in Madison. And I think that's from what was going on in our region. We had well over 100 people, but we didn't have 300.
Greg, will you share on how this affected your recovery and how it changed your life?
After Montgomery, there was almost fist fights at the region. And you know, as a member yourself, we don't like to live in controversy. If you're trying to recover, I mean, if you're just hanging around, then controversy's fine, well and good. But if you're trying to recover, you want to get past that. And then after a while, it begins to become a weight. I personally bought 200 Baby Blues from Grateful Dave. I understand and understood Dave's message. Fellowship owns the lid. And subcommittees are directly responsible to those they serve. And if they are not, then they are not in A. We gave those books out in H&I meetings where they couldn't afford books, jails and the institutions. Not one of those books were sold. People said that we were producing the books, buying the books, and selling the books, and getting rich. They sold the books for what he had what it cost him. And sometimes he gave them away. I know. I asked him. I went to the source. I sat down and talked with him. Okay? I sat with him and talked to him. Dave's heart was in the right place. Was in the right place. All of these were back to the love affair. You got somebody trying to pull you away, trying to separate you. You got the concepts going on. Okay? You got the fight over our lip. Third edition revised, the fourth edition, the fifth edition, the all this. And there's so much animosity, so much anger that, and then you take the region on top of that, it took a toll on me. When I went to Gadsden, or maybe above Gadsden, to a regional meeting, and the same individual started in and kept on. And I finally just got up and walked out of the room, and he followed me out and was spitting in my face in the parking lot, threatening to beat my ass. I was just standing up against the car, you know, going, shaking my head. Could not believe what was happening. You know, just totally drained of emotion at that point. When some other members grabbed him by the arms and pulled him off and pulled him away. And I thought, thank God I got a little recovery today, because if this had been a few years ago, I'd shot the son of a bitch. You know? The next RSC, it started all over again. They tried to impeach our chair. They tried to impeach our co-chair. They tried to shut our committee down. They brought it to a vote. They voted to keep our committee intact. They voted not to impeach our chair. And these are all people that I loved and cared deeply about. And it was affecting every one of them. Tully resigned. Pete, it was driving him nuts. Crazy. He was the regional chair. I mean, none of us could understand why this was going on. At that regional meeting, is either in Birmingham or Montgomery, after another hour of fighting and bickering, I got with the GSRs and said, I'm done. I'm finished. I can't do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. Fuck this. And I left. I resigned. Our region split. A new region was formed. It's called the Anonymi region. And if you've done a little homework, you know what Anonymi stands for. Tullier was our first chair. It was recognized at the next World Service Conference. On my personal level, it broke my heart. I quit talking to my sponsor. I quit being involved in area regional service. I took a job out of state, and I reverted back to old behavior. I ran. I didn't know how to deal with the pain. I couldn't look at you in the face and say it's okay, because it wasn't okay. It just wasn't all right. I ended up divorced in another state, acting out on old behavior, using women to change the way I felt about me. I didn't get loaded, but I used something outside of myself to change the way I felt about me, you know, but it didn't feel whole. It didn't work. So I ran a little bit further. From Memphis to Oklahoma. Ended up in a real self-destructive relationship. The one thing that Bill instilled in me years ago is he looked at me and he said, Grover, you're going to have to learn how to live outside of these meetings. Because for the first year, I think I was in a meeting every day, sometimes three on Friday, sometimes two on Saturday, every week. And I lived in meetings. And Bill pulled me aside one day and said, one day you're going to have to live outside of these meetings. And you know how we do it. We always take things to extremes. there's one thing, in my opinion, you can't do and you can't con a con. And I could not at that time pallet what was going on. I didn't want to think about WSO. I didn't want to think about the WFC. I didn't want to think about the Conference Agenda Report. I didn't want to think about service. What I wanted to do was live and have peace. Because my lover had been destroyed. My relationship was destroyed through that process. That was in 1991. Bill and Ryan and Bo were the only people that talked to me without judgment. That let me be who I was without trying to impose some judgment or looking at me like I had pissed all over. That loved me anyway. And no matter what was going on, Billy Russell was another member of North Alabama that couldn't be conned and wouldn't accept half. You either followed the traditions or you didn't. When my wife left in 97 and I was sitting there in an empty house trying to find my kids 2 o'clock in the morning, Billy had been ostracized from the meetings in Huntsville because of his beliefs. He was dying of hepatitis C. He was alone. I picked up the phone and called Billy. He talked to me at 6 o'clock. No judgment. No, you should have. By the time we hung up the phone, he had me laughing. Gave me some hope. Bo kept reaching out and saying, Grover, you need to write about it. You need to write what happened through the history experience because other people have left the fellowship and other people have felt like you felt. I couldn't fathom. Really couldn't. Because I thought I was the only one that felt that way. Somehow, between God, Ryan, and Bo, I ended up at a convention in North Alabama this February. I picked up a couple of chips. I never got loaded, and I'd come home to pick up a chip. But you can count the meetings that I've been to since 1991 to this year's 2003, probably on one hand, and probably have a finger or two left over. I walked into that meeting, and they'd asked me to help share on history. And I said, you're probably not going to want to hear what I got to say. But I'll come help you if you want to. When I walked in there, there was Donnie, Roxanne, Tully, Susie, Mike, Ed, all my family, Bo, and I cried like a baby because for the first time since I left, I felt like I was home.
Well, there seems to be numerous people in NA that have left because of, for similar reasons that you left. And you made it back, and I know a lot of people didn't.
When I left that convention in February, Bo and I talked on the cell phone from the time I left to the time I got to Oklahoma. It's a 9-hour drive. We formulated the idea for a website and a book. The book is called Traditions, Words, Past Ways of Peace. Bo talked to me and told me I needed to write, invited me to participate in the NA Way of Life website, gave me the web address. I went there. There were 7 members on the NA Way of Life website at that time and very few posts. We started communicating. I started writing. Other people started writing. All of a sudden, there's 40 members and pages of posts. Now there's 78 members. Pages and pages and pages. 777 posts the last time I looked. I was able to get, write some. Other people would write. I could identify. I learned about people that left for the same reason that died. Big Lou blasted, character assassinated from the podium of a convention, got loaded and died. Who the hell does that? Where is that a spiritual principle in Narcotics Anonymous? These people, I found, Mickey M. from Gunnersville was the vice chair of the Nonamai region. Couldn't deal with it. Couldn't deal with all the pain, all the hatred, all the lies, all the bullshit, and finally just gave up and got loaded and died. And Mickey would have gave his shirt to help anybody. Most kind, soft-spirited person. Every one of these people I started finding out that had gone a similar path, but either got loaded and died from another disease, still in isolation and alone. It's like they died then when I learned about it. So I sat there at that keyboard and I typed and I cried and I typed and I cried and we worked and we formed the na-history.org website. And our intent was to make all the archives available to the fellowship at large free of charge and to write this, to finish what we started, to write the book. And the name Traditions Wars, Pathway to Peace came from a meeting and a member in Georgia. And it fits because the way that I see it today is that it is a war and has been a war over traditions and spiritual service or that of corporate service and mandates. And that's the dividing line that I see, that I saw, still see it today. And I'm in hopes that through this weekend, this effort that's going on here today, the right hard questions can be asked of longtime members. And hopefully we can find a common thread to finish our 4-step and to bring some healing and unity. Now, a lot of people, I'm sure, will say, well, there's not any disunity. It's all just y'all. Well, by God, if it's got webbed feet and feathers and quacks, it's still a fucking duck. And I see a lot of ducks running around. You know, a lot of them. And a lot of people hurt and a lot of people that are not feeling very unified. I see a very strong dividing line. So I'm in hopes that this can be finished. I am grateful today for the people that allowed me to be me. If I told you everything that went on in the years that I was gone, you wouldn't believe me.
If you could think of 3 of those hard questions that you just mentioned that you hope you can get asked of your timers, what would they be?
Let me borrow your notepad. should the traditions guide the fellowship? Do service boards, committees serve the fellowship, and should they be responsible to those they serve, and if so, how? Should all service boards and committees be financially responsible to those they serve? Do you feel that NA will ever come together as a unified fellowship? Has it ever been unified? Has it? Just think of our last speaker, with Jimmy Kay in the office. I believe that was a huge rift. What's it going to take for all interested parties to come together and work for a common good and for us to function within our traditions and steps as a fellowship and for those service boards and committees to be directly responsible to those they serve and financially responsible as well? Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend.